You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hello and welcome to Bald Move Television. We're the officially unofficial podcast for all of television. For the next several weeks, we're going to be taking our Wednesdays and devoting a little time and attention to a David Simon project that's called The Deuce on HBO. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Jim, I'm wondering, what's The Deuce? If you wanted to give someone, this is Bald Move TV, we cover all of television, we gotta break off a little taste for people. What is The Deuce?
It's David Simon's expose on the porn industry, and maybe more specifically the porn industry in New York City on 42nd Street and Times Square.
Yeah, it spans like a roughly 10-year period from the mid-70s to the mid-80s. Each year roughly jumps forward 5 years in time, it feels like.
Ish, yeah.
Yeah. And it's also like a kind of Cliff Notes version of The Wire. A lot of the kind of like social economic intersection of crime, intersection of society, the critiques that David Simon and his fellows make in The Wire are made in just two or three seasons here in The Deuce. So if you haven't watched The Wire, well, you should stop and watch The Wire. But if you want to kind of like wire training wheels, because this is similarly sprawling, massive characters, very interconnected plot that always comes together quite beautifully by the end of the year. So having said that, what'd you think of the first outing of season three of The Deuce?
I don't want to repeat myself because I know in the past I've talked about, you know, how mesmerizing the show is and how it just drops you in this time and place and makes you feel that. And that still sticks with me for season three. It looks like, and this should have been, you know, obvious and in its inevitability from the outset, this is where it all comes crashing down for Times Square as it stands in the 70s and 80s. Because there are big development projects on the horizon. The city is actively trying to change that street. And it's, you know, you can see the cracks. You can see where everything is just crumbling.
Yeah.
For, you know, this sleazy underground.
Yeah. And you got big money on one side pushing. You got a bunch of hustlers and crooks and gangsters on the other. Which sides do you think is going to win?
Right.
I think that this, it shares a lot of the DNA that the first episode of the second season did, where it's like you just get in this whirlwind reintroduction to every character, what they're doing. And it's what's amazing is how effective they are with, like, there's probably 12 different plots going on, and they probably get an average of 4 to 5 minutes. And yet I feel like, okay, I've got a good understanding of where Frankie is and what he's been doing in the last, like, I've got a good understanding of how Abby and Vincent's relationship is working now as it relates to. And it's also a lot of fun. There's a lot of jokes. There's a lot of comedy.
Yeah.
There's just flashes. Like I like Tommy flashing his gun at the Wolf Pack, you know, our first meeting of the Wolf Pack. And it's like, oh, this isn't some executive from Wall Street. This guy's dangerous.
The guy's got money, but he's not to be fucked with.
Yeah. Yeah. Brooklyn ain't taking what this guy's made. It's just a lot of fun, and nothing too serious happens in this episode other than a couple of tourists getting their faces pushed in. But you can tell, like as you said, you can feel the pressure, you can see the cracks, it's really good. I got a couple of things I wanted to talk about before we kind of got into the plot. I read Alan Zeppelwald's review on Rolling Stones, and I thought he had made a really good point that there's almost like a meta commentary on gentrification that this show itself, since, you know, moving into the mid 80s, there's a lesser emphasis on the prostitutes and the pimps, which has a side effect of removing a lot of the color in terms of people from the show.
Yeah.
And how that kind of mirrors like a modern gentrification process when you flood, you know, money into an area and you push out a lot of the poor people and the minorities, and you're left with this kind of like other thing. And it feels like that, like, that's kind of what the Deuce is going. The Deuce itself is being gentrified at the show as it's portraying the, you know, the gentrification of Times Square.
Yeah, like where's Larry? Where's Larry? He was like my favorite thing about last season.
Yeah.
Where's Larry? We don't get to see him.
Where's Leon? Where's like, and the thing is like when we do check in with the, some of the female prostitutes, it's like they're like Shay looks like she's at the end of her fucking rope.
Oh man.
Or is it Angie? I haven't quite gotten, or, the one that they're switching up their looks by putting it on wigs and stuff. She's entirely gone to the New York pornography scene because, you know, it's safer than turning tricks.
Yeah, I don't remember her name.
I've got her name written down somewhere in my notes, but I just thought that was an interesting kind of meta commentary point.
But you mentioned, you know, how it takes there's a lot of getting back into the Deuce, mm-hmm. and I felt that like I couldn't remember characters' name. I couldn't remember both of the main brothers' names played by James Franco.
I was Vinny, like,
Frankie, what's the other one?
It's funny because I had Vinny, and okay. I was like, what is Fred? And then someone says, like, oh, yeah. It's one of those things where it's like, I know everybody's faces and I know their deal, yeah. And their names are going to start to come back. I actually made a point of looking them all up.
But you have to get, like, reacclimated to the whole thing because it does do the time jump. People look different. Speaking of looking different, Bobby, holy shit, man, what's with his hair?
He's borrowing someone else's. There's no more
that scene where he's in the bathroom of the club and he's banging,
and the thing is flopping around.
It's like something out of Kingpin. It's hilarious.
There's so many people that have the stink of death surrounding them this episode. Yeah. I'm not sure who all is going to meet bad fates or not, but he's one of them. That's like, God, he. It's so interesting to see his arc that he's so scared of these diseases that are going around. These, you know, like this is the mid-80s, mm-hmm. you know, the AIDS epidemic is well underway, but there's still a lot of misinformation. There's still a lot of fear and uncertainty and doubt among all types of communities. Like they didn't shy away from like, you know, some of the misinformation and fear and uncertainty in the gay community versus the straight community.
Yeah, it's interesting to see Paul's sort of relationship with that, because he clearly knows that his partner has AIDS, right? Uh-huh. But like, he also understands like this is not something that's transmissible via the air,
right?
Or via kissing. Like he's still, you know, he's not afraid to do those things. Whereas Bobby gets in there and he freaks out with the doctor, like,
right?
Oh, there's probably a lot of gay people come in here. Oh my God, I'm
I
might get it.
But yet he's powerless to rein in his own weaknesses. Like he can't, he makes the resolve to like, well, you know, I'm scared straight. I'm going away from the strange. He can't even make it through that day.
Right.
Like I'm pretty sure he's banging in it before the clock hits midnight. No, he could not make it through that day before his coach turned into a pumpkin and he loses his glass slipper. Before we get further in the episode, I want to do some housekeeping here for baldmove.com. Obviously, Baldmove TV, we're talking about the Deuce this week and the weeks to come. We also have a new show coming back next week. American Horror Story starts its 1984 season next Wednesday. Cecily and I will be enunciating all of our proper nouns properly and be covering the show. It's a lot of fun. It's a little bit looser than our normal style of coverage if you're into AHS or horror. And who isn't? I mean, we're heading into horror season.
I saw the preview for it. It looked kind of awesome.
That's American Horror Story. It is kind of awesome. It is kind of infuriating.
This is like my kind of awesome with the 80s campy horror. Yeah.
Sure.
I might be watching that too.
But. Yeah, it's all about it's probably got some George Orwell going in it with the 1984, but it's also mostly about Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street and whatever else Ryan Murphy can get to stick to the canvas. Another thing, Jim and I started a new podcast called Pickle Me This to chronicle all things Rick and Morty. We marathoned through the first two seasons, and now we're slowing down on season three. You can find Pickle Me This by going to any place to listen to podcasts and search for Pickle Me This. Season three is kind of cool because we're doing it one a week to kind of serve as a countdown to season four, which starts mid-November. One of the things we're excited about starting in season three is that we've got some guest interviews, our collaborators, co-hosts, I think they're called in the podcast world. We started our first episode of season three of Jonah Ray from Mystery Science Theater 3000 fame. And we've got some other cool guests lined up. Alan Sepinwall, who is mentioned throughout this here podcast, is going to be making an appearance to talk about Rick and Morty. It's going to be awesome. Bald movies really heating up in the last bit of this year. We had It Chapter 2 that we reviewed last week. This week, Cecily and I are going to see an advanced screening of Downton Abbey, which comes out next week, to talk about that because we're huge Downton Abbey fans. And then, of course, Lunch with Jim and Aaron every Friday had a new player enter the arena. Cecily is now the moderator on Lunch with Jim and Aaron. So you get same low club price, but you get 50% more participants in lunch. That savings you can take to the podcast bank. And that's what's going on here at baldmove.com. What do you think of the new intro, Dreaming by Blondie?
I mean, it's fitting. It's all about, you know, the VHS, the home video stuff that's happening. It's about the AIDS epidemic, all that. Yeah, I like it.
I feel like I don't like it as well. I feel like my favorite The Deuce intro is going to be season two.
Yeah, I really like this year's model.
Which is
that
funny because
so
I remember we both, I don't think, liked the new song when the season started. So it's like, I wonder if it's one of those things where it's like, it's just a different ear feel. And
it is. I think my actual favorite Wire theme song was the second season as
yes.
well.
Yes. Yeah, it's like a little more bluesy. Yeah. So maybe the second season, it's just the second season knack on the music.
Go watch season two of Treme. See what that's all about.
Yeah, that's I haven't seen any Treme. It's
me
one
either.
Of my shameful David Simon secrets. The other thing I wondered is like they had this great device to have a lot of the East Coast, West Coast meet in the form of this, Las Vegas CES show with the attending second floor adult video extravaganza.
Yeah.
That's the one other concern I have for this season is like, how are they going to continue to tell the story of Lori when she is so far removed? Are they going to bring her back to New York somehow for some reason? Because like, there's not going to be an adult show in Vegas every week.
Right.
But it was so nice to see like Eileen and Lori and Harvey and all these people circulating together. I'm curious to see.
You might be able to send Eileen out that way. Like if Harvey's not going to fund her quote unquote feminist porn, she might head out to the West Coast and see what's going on out there.
It does look to seem like, especially New York is stuck in the really, I don't know. It seems like New York is posed to do the more gutter, you know,
it's Frankie's
artsy.
Fault.
Yeah.
Frankie's the one doing it.
Maybe Frankie's the one's been this leading this wave that's built up to the new wave hookers,
right.
But maybe her going out to LA to try to do something a little more classy, a little bit more boogie nights.
Could be. Especially because, you know, Lori was in Red Hot and like they've got that relationship already.
Yeah.
She might try and do something with her.
Yeah. But I don't know, because that's the thing. It's like Lori's kind of in a bad way. Not many people are doing well.
No.
And that's one of the things, I guess, like to start off the conversation into the more plot oriented, this whole Wolfpack deal, which is kind of spearheaded by Detective Chris Alston's, it's his new beat, because they're supposed to hold the line, wait for all this real estate money to fix everything. He's like, we're not able to do it because we got nothing. We got no answer for this. The Deuce did seem scarier.
Oh, absolutely.
And I couldn't put my finger on it because like the Deuce has always been portrayed as being scary to like squares. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of like if you were part of the community, it's like, you know, it's flashy and it's adult and it's fun and it's thrilling. But, you know, if you were reasonably street smart, you could navigate it. And now it just seems like even people like Vince and Abby are run off the streets by these wolf packs, and just the more it's like, it's not vicey, it's more just like straight up, you're gonna get fucked up and robbed.
Yeah.
And then
you got Herc coming in to put the kibosh on that.
It's so funny because I was watching this with Cecily, and Cecily's like kind of background watching this because she's, you know, wasn't in Underground 4 in the Deuce. But like when they started talking about this Jack Maple, her ears pricked up because she's a big true crime fan. And I guess this guy, I don't know anything about him. I haven't read ahead.
Me either.
But I guess this guy's big swinging dick in cop circles. Like he pioneered the system of like crime report statistics reporting that allowed the police to, you know, because he's talking about like what he's talking about is essentially old fashioned police work. Like David Simon calls it police intelligence.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, you know, Herc was famous in The Wire for ripping and rolling, which is just doing corner stops, getting, you know, people for minor possession and trafficking, and they're not trying to roll up to get to the Avon Barksdales and really, you know, if you're fighting a war on drugs, then fucking fight it. And this guy's a transit cop. I love the introduction to him because he's living in this fucking dungeon.
Oh, yeah.
This, like, yeah. The headquarters for his transit cops is like the worst kind of fucking... It almost looks like a thieves' den in like a Robin Hood story, you know?
Okay.
Because everybody's wearing plain clothes and they're dressed like, you know... they're dressed like a breakdancing crew or homeless people, or Herc's like set up like a past the prime Beastie Boys.
Yeah.
But it's just, there's just like something kind of like disreputable, but you can tell he knows his shit. And even like the top brass, when they show the one like campaign manager, Gene, he's asking for permission to use this guy. And it's like, yeah, he's a jerk, but he knows his stuff.
Yeah, he's always right, which helps when you're a jerk. He seems like he's disruptive to the way, you know, the police typically do things now,
right?
In that area. So, yeah, of course he's going to be shit on, but, you know, when you're usually right and your methods work.
Well, this is a big theme from, like, the Wire, the whole concept of juking stats and, like, doing what makes you look good rather than what makes you a good cop. Because, like, you know, Jack here is decrying the fact that, like, most guys, you know, they see a wolf pack, they grab the slowest person, bring him in, book him, and clear the case. Like, we just solved the case. He's actually, you know, which is faster, and if you're a beat cop, gets you home quicker, right?
Mm-hmm, sure.
And you got a clearance on your record. This stuff where he's grabbing guys, and he's interrogating them, and then they're going out and trying to find his buddies, that takes a hell of a lot longer, but it actually attacks the root of the system. And it's these perverse, probably why he's later famous for, you know, have this revolutionary stat system. That's like the perverse part of crime enforcement that... Well,
you want to do is you want to – basically, it would be great if you could eliminate any arrests, right? Like,
right.
We made no arrests this month because there weren't any crimes to arrest people for.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate goal, but there are two ways to get to the no arrests, right?
Yeah.
We can either not do our jobs
and just
not arrest people who are committing crimes.
Right.
Or we can eliminate the root causes of crimes.
Right.
That should be your goal, but it doesn't seem – it seems like the more arrests you make, the better people think you're doing.
Yeah.
And that – translates that means there's more crime to arrest people for. Why is that a good thing?
Yeah, it's not just specific to cops. Like, I've always heard stories of like, you know, technical support that people are like graded on how long they're on calls. Well, if they have a customer that needs 15 minutes of tech support, guess what? The next three people are getting hung up on, so they bring that average back, or they're forcing them off, or it's like, are you incentivizing good service, or are you incentivizing hitting an arbitrary metric?
Right.
And I'm imagining, since this guy is kind of like a, you know, known for this thing, that they're going to be developing this all season long. And probably it's going to, if I know anything about David Simon's work, it's going to culminate in a winning system that cleans up the part of the city that the power and money cared about. And then Jack will go back to his dungeon, this stat system will be ignored by the brass, and the deuce will continue cockroaching on.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun to watch. the next most impactful, I think, character is Frankie. You want to talk about Frankie for a little bit?
Okay. Yeah. It seems like he's now a porn director.
Yeah.
He's now like in Harvey's business.
He's got his fingers in a lot of pies.
Well, yeah, he's doing drug deals.
He's doing direct-to-video adult sales.
Yeah, which is why I say maybe he's, you know, the source of this change. Like, obviously he's not.
Right.
He's just seeing a trend and rolling with it like Frankie always does.
Right.
But yeah, he's gone from like financier.
It would be to funny actually if it turns out Frankie and Vinny are actually the Dark Brothers in Pimp Disguise. They're actually
Dark,
yeah, they're the producers that,
oh, in the pit, yeah,
yeah,
in the,
yeah,
pit, that's right,
in the adult show.
Oh, God.
You know, one of the big pastimes we had last year is predicting Frank was going to die.
Yeah,
like there was, so I can't remember the exact specifics, but there was like something about him like, oh, I can't see Vincent or Frankie being 30 years old or whatever. This guy running game behind Rudy's back,
man,
and he's stepping on product and selling to guys that he thinks are too dumb to know and ripping them off. Like, he's burning the crime end, the crime candle at both ends.
He is, man. I wonder what this move with Rudy is going to do, because Rudy in that conversation points out, you've been stealing from me for years, and I come to you asking for the tiniest of favors after I've overlooked that shit.
Yeah.
and you deny me? Get out of here.
I'm
what's
wanting
he
to
gonna
cut
do?
Of some of the stuff I probably are entitled to cuts to, and let alone the mini hustles that I don't even know about.
Right.
Like, I think Rudy's still got enough power that this is going to end poorly. Although it would be funny if it's like some black street gang that kills him instead because they're mad that he's shitting on their product.
Yeah, it's coming at him from every angle. I just wonder, like, Rudy has always seemed like a dangerous character, but has turned out to be more bark than bite, in my opinion.
Right.
I wonder if this is going to be the same.
Ooh, because we also predicted downfall of Rudy.
Yeah.
That, like, Rudy was doing too much of his own product, doing too many of his own girls, being kind of, like, fat and lazy and comfortable, and that's not, like, long-term successful strategy for gangsters.
Right.
So this is, like, I don't know whether we're seeing the fact that Rudy just doesn't have the juice anymore. Like, he's going to Frank. He can't even roll tough on Frankie.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like his business is being affected by the AIDS epidemic, I
right.
assume.
It's almost like, so the way I understood that, because, you know, I didn't live through this, but, like, I followed, like, some commentators that are, like, 10 years older than me, and, like, you know, you can't understate how much the AIDS crisis scared the shit out of everybody.
Yeah.
Like, there's a whole generation of, like, you know, it, like, put the cold bucket of water on the prostitution game, on, like, just a hookup culture, and... you know, there's so much misinformation and fear and uncertainty and doubt that, like, you know, people ran away from a lot of this, like, sex-based trade. And the people are still – it's like this weird self-selecting process where the people that were still willing to go and hire a prostitute or still willing to go and frequent bathhouses – were selected by the high-risk-seeking behavior people, and those are the type of people that wouldn't wear condoms and wouldn't be discriminating who they date and would have many, many frequent encounters. And it's just like this pool where, like, the pool's getting shallower and shallower and fuller of people that are more likely to be risk-taking, and it's the risk-takers that are getting it. I don't know. I'm wondering if, like, all these people that we're seeing involved in this are going to – because that's the thing. Like, this was portrayed as, like, kind of like a gay disease, but straight people did get it. You know, I'm wondering if they're doing something with Eileen's mom, just the deep, like,
yeah,
maybe she got from a blood transfusion or something, and
some kind of degenerative illness. We don't really know what it is.
Yeah, because I don't know. I don't know where the deuce is going. Are they going for, like, you know, a slice of all lives, or are they going for, like, you know, how it kind of, like, really brutalized the gay community? I don't know.
Wouldn't that just be the most ironic thing? Like, they're giving her a hard time about her industry, her porn industry
right.
career, and then
her straight-laced mom and dad
right, end up coming down with it. Jeez.
Yeah. So that's the bad things about Frankie. I'm amazed to see a few things about Frankie. Frankie married that dancing porn star.
He did. He's shooting
and
home
made a relationship out of it.
Uh-huh.
Is this a controversial statement? Frankie is 10 times the dad that Vincent is.
Yeah, you're probably not wrong. I mean, I don't see Vincent ever shooting a home video with his kid.
I mean, that was sweet that, like, you think that Frankie's going to borrow this camera for some kind of, like, fucking filth documentary that he's right. up to, and he's just filming a family video.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still stepping out on Miss Fuego, and he's still running a whole bunch of dangerous schemes that's probably going to end up getting him killed and maybe someone he cares about. But, like, he is really involved, where in contrast to Vinny, there's a conversation he's having with his ex-wife about his daughter stripping. And he's like, you know, it's a classy club. They're not even allowed to touch the girls. That he doesn't and hasn't cared for a long time.
Yeah. No, it's interesting, the Frankie stuff, how he's playing it like this subterfuge. Like, he doesn't want to let people know why he's using the camera.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this normal, wholesome thing he's doing would be so weird to them.
Yeah, it would.
Like, what the fuck is up with Frankie?
Yeah, Frankie's lost his... He's starting to grow up a bit. And that's the thing is, like, I do think that Frankie is growing up.
Yeah.
And being a little bit more shrewd and definitely more ambitious, but I don't know. Because that's the one thing that kind of got, like, he got, could have gotten in trouble with Rudy last year. It's just that he was such a joke. It kind of, like, Rudy let him off just because it's funny. It's like, hey, I got a story I can tell my gangster buddies that are, you know, at the bada bing. So whatever. I don't know. And then that by the end, you can kind of see the result of Frankie's burning the crime candle at both ends, because like his drug dealer friend's like, yo, slow down, because he's smoking two cigarettes at a time. Mm-hmm. He's doing fat rails. It's New Year's Eve, but still.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Frankie is the one that I think is probably most certain to die.
Still? You're still on this old thing, huh?
It could be that like he's the misdirection, but it seems like he is doing a lot of dangerous, high-profile things, and the only way he gets out of this is if the street gang he's ripping off doesn't care and Rudy is too fat and old to make an issue of it, which is possible.
No, you're right. He's in a lot of different corners in this episode.
Shall we transition to Vince and Abby?
Yeah, this is getting interesting, I think.
It is.
I was shocked to see that they were still together.
Right. And almost the exact same place they were 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Except
Abby seems a little bit more jaded and angry about the whole thing.
Yeah, but like...
She seems distant. She seems like she's conflicted about, you know, what Vincent does for a living, mm-hmm. and like all the things he's involved in and her involvement thereby.
Right, but that's where she was back at the turn of the 80s, and I feel like...
I see it in the way she walks. I see it in the way she looks at Vinny.
And they're still trying to make it work. I'm just wondering, because, like, it's weird, because, like, this open relationship, like, I buy that maybe they would catch feelings for each other, and there's, like, this kind of, like, petty jealousy that kind of stacks up and erodes the relationship over time, or I guess I would believe that... you know, something that Vincent said in the last season on about, you know, when he first met Abby, she was just, you know, co-ed in college and she had never seen the world. And now, like 5 years later, she sees it so much clearer than he. I feel like that's continued to go on. Like that conversation they had in the indicative where Vinny's like, hey, they're going to put this Taj Mahal in a toilet. And she's like, if the big money people see it differently, then it's going to be differently. Like she's 10 times smarter. From not like maybe street smart, but like from a holistic, you know, seeing the world as a whole integrated place than he is. But like, I don't know. So I buy either of those things, but it's just so weird because I feel like the acting is them being jealous of each other, but the story they're telling is her just outgrowing him. And what it feels like in between 1980 and 1985 is David Simon just took this relationship, cryo-froze it, and then thought it out. And I didn't feel like that way about any of the other plot lines. Like, I just feel like the forces that were shearing their relationship would have destroyed it in the last 5 years.
Yeah, I thought I would have said that too coming out of season two. But I think, I don't know, the vibe I got is that this is sort of a relationship of momentum. Like, they had a relationship, and so they have a relationship. But it's clear to me that Vincent is trying... Vincent is looking for the thing he had before. You know, he goes to his father last season and he says, look, I want a family. I want a relationship like that. And his father says, you had one.
Yeah.
And you gave it up. And I think Vincent is more than ever starting to regret that. And that's why you see him, you know, telling his ex that he misses her, like them getting back together. I think this is a path toward Vincent realizing what he had in his family and maybe trying to pull a Frankie. If that
with Abby trying to settle down. Oh, okay.
No, not with Abby, with his ex.
Oh.
Like, get back with her.
That ship sailed, dude. Like, you can have a family, but it's always going to have a family where your daughter's a stripper.
His daughter's way too
old
to recover at this point.
Yeah. You're not going to have, like, maybe what Frankie. What?
For sure.
Jesus.
But I think that's what Vincent is looking for in his ex, right? Like, whether it's realistic or not.
What are the odds that there's going to be a Tale of Two Cities deal between Frankie and Vincent?
Oh, God. Who's going to sacrifice?
It'd be Vinny. Vinny would sacrifice himself for Frankie.
Do you think Frankie would do the other way around?
No.
If presented with the opportunity?
I don't know. Maybe an older, wiser Frankie, but like...
Maybe. But I'm leaning toward, Vincent.
Because at this point... Which one would have the bigger impact on the larger world? Like you said, like Vincent's kids seem like they're already on their way to doing whatever. Frankie's just starting out. He's got a much more stable situation. I don't know. Would it be hokey for like Vincent to deliberately take a gang hit for his brother or something like that? Because it's also foreshadows what happened in the very beginning of the show. Vincent took a beating that was Frankie's.
Yeah.
Not willingly, but still.
All right. You're selling me.
I just don't know if it'd be like full on hokey to do the, you know.
I mean, I've never seen
Simon. Far, far better thing.
I've never seen Simon and Pelicanos do hokey.
True.
Like, even things that should be hokey, they nail with a realism that just makes them feel right.
That's true. There's an interesting scene where Gene Goldman, the kind of campaign manager for the mayor, he is at the, what is the Vincent's Club? It's not the Hi-Hat. That's Abby's bar. Club
30
or something like that. He sees this victim across the room. I think it's an AIDS. You're supposed to understand it's an AIDS victim. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Gene's a closeted gay man, and this guy just looks like a ghost.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell whether, because they locked eyes, and I wondered, like, if that was somebody that Gene dated in a previous season, or if it's just, I could also, because there's a lot of this, just like, if you're a gay man and you're looking out and seeing this, it's just like, holy shit.
It's got to be terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. Like this is like, that's literally like the specter that's kind of haunting you. And there's like, there's also like, Paul's attitude towards these people where he's, you know, he's embracing them and like, you know, looking after them and treating them like people. And then maybe Gene, who, cause he had that speech where he hooked up with the guy and he's just like, you know, this is this. And I also a husband and I have a wife and a career. And like, that's that, like that he's like, that it's a different type of relationship. But it also could be, oh, God, I know that guy, and I don't know, because it's, like, very – there's no dialogue. It's all facial expression. And
and this whole episode is full of, oh, God, that's a scary AIDS thing.
Yeah.
Like, there are four or five instances with characters across the spectrum here who you look at and you go, oh, no.
Yeah, really.
Like,
poignant.
Even down to Shay. I'm half worried about her, too.
Yeah. I mean, take your pick of what poison ails her.
Right.
It could be late stage drugs, alcoholism,
Rodney withdrawals.
Yeah. Whatever it could be. And then I don't know. There's this ironic thing at the end where he drinks with, has a drink with Candy. I like paying attention who calls her Eileen and who calls her Candy.
In the industry, several people call her Candy.
Yeah. Yeah. But it seems like her friends, like it's Eileen. Did Lori call her Candy? I thought she called her Eileen.
Maybe I believe you're right.
Maybe they didn't even address each other by name.
Yeah.
But like them toasting to all the great things coming down the pike. I don't think there's going to be many great things coming down 1986 pike.
Not for this.
The
this
Nintendo
block.
Entertainment Center.
Yeah.
Our system at the end of the year. That's it. If Vinny can hold on for Super Mario, they might be able to turn things around.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers have a chance to exercise their rights under the Patreon pact we've made by voting for the next pulp movie that Jim and I will be covering. If you're one of the elite few backers at the executive producer level, don't miss your chance to influence us. Hurry over to patreon.com/baldmove and vote in the latest movie poll before it closes on Wednesday morning.
And for all other club members, we've got an all-new episode of Lunch with Jim and Aaron this Friday afternoon. Catch the live stream at 1 p.m. to interact with us and your fellow munchers over on Patreon, or you can wait for the podcast to drop later that day.
If you want even more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcasts, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
Okay, we're going to take a little break here so I can talk about the club, the Bald Move Club. Club.baldmove.com is how you can directly support Jim and I and our odyssey of all of television. And you get a lot of great benefits. Ad-free feeds, you know, we're getting as we get bigger and more established as a company, we're getting more ads. Obviously, ads annoy people. It's real easy to make them go away. If you join the club, club.baldmove.com. You can get subscribed to ad-free feeds. If you're a club member listening to this ad, you don't know about it, go to baldmove.com. Make sure you're logged in. Click on the premium features and use the podcast subscription tool to get subscribed to ad-free feeds. You know, one of the big selling points in the next couple months is our spoiler reviews for the movies that we talked about in the housekeeping are exclusive to our club members. So if you want to hear us talk about the many, many movies that are coming out down the pike, Ad Astra, Joker, Zombieland 2, Dr. Sleep, Ford versus Ferrari, Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, Star Wars Episode 9, What the Hell Will They Do Now? all these coming out in the last bit of 2019, they will all be exclusive to club members for the spoiler review. Lots of great reasons to join club.baldmove.com. How about we talk about Lori?
Okay, let's do it.
Lori has been to rehab 5 times now.
Was it 5? Oh, shit.
I don't know if she's making a joke because her, her agent, rep,
boyfriend,
upscale pimp. It seems like that he's just
all
her.
Of the above.
He's just a pimp from a different name. Mentions that 3rd time's a charm, and she says 5. But I don't know if that was like gallows humor or just her matter-of-factly correcting the. But it's such a great introduction to this guy whose name is Greg, because you can just see what a dick he is. He picks her up in his Mercedes. He tells her, "Hey, easy with the luggage," as she's putting it in the back seat. Wants her to get right back in the saddle, like. Mm-hmm. I don't see how this man is different from CeCe.
And is, I don't know, abusing substances right in front of her.
Yep.
Throughout the entire episode.
That's what I'm saying. It's different levels of abuse, but like the fundamental exploitive nature of the relationship and him seeing her as an object that, like an ATM, like him and CeCe are brothers from different coasts and mothers. But
absolutely.
I thought that was interesting. Do you want to talk about the CES show? I thought that was a really fascinating cultural artifact.
Yeah, so I knew what they were going for as soon as they talked about, you know, the other show and Vegas and like all that stuff, because this is in tech circles a super notable thing that like every year with the Consumer Electronics Show, you also have this paired thing where a bunch of porn industry people get together and do their own event in the same building for a long time. Apparently in the floor above during this era. I was trying to figure out, because they show a sign that says Adult Consumer Electronics Show. I don't know if that's a joke that the adult show put up.
Oh.
Or because I don't think that's real. I don't think that show's
CES
name
would probably
is real.
Shut that down. And there's surely in 1985 they didn't have an official adult.
It wasn't the Adult Entertainment Expo yet.
Yeah.
That wasn't around. So I don't know what it is. But yeah, this is a very famous thing that happened.
This coupling.
Yeah.
And it's like, it seems like it's very technologically joined at the hip, because porn is now moving out of theaters and moving into people's homes with the advent of Betamax and VHS.
Yeah. Like, and Harvey seems to be all about it. You know, he understands the market is moving that way. I've got to follow.
It's been a funny joke in tech circles for a long time that like porn leads the technology industry, like into adoption of home VHS tapes, early adoption of internet, e-commerce, like all these things. Porn has led the way. Right now, I think probably if people are honest and wrote down top 3 uses of VR technology, one of them would be VR porn.
Sure.
Because holy shit, I don't have a VR rig, but I feel like every other fucking porn result is a VR thing.
The Oculus porn.
Which version do you got? You got this one, or you got Oculus,
Rift,
or you got the Sony system, or it's like, fuck, what is this? And why is it so fucking, why are the files so fucking big?
but I mean, it seems like, you know, the Harvey is very much moving in this direction of new wave hookers. Or he realizes that he has to in order to make a buck. And that's what he's in it for, right? And there's always been this at odds relationship between Harvey and Eileen, because she wants to make respectable porn.
Yeah.
She wants to make stuff she's proud of. Harvey wants to make a buck.
Yeah.
They need each other, or at least they certainly did in the past. seems like Harvey doesn't think he needs Eileen as much.
Yeah.
Because he's telling her, look, get on board with this.
I think he thinks Eileen's a liability if she keeps doing what she's doing.
Yeah. And I don't know that he's wrong.
I think that he's wrong if he's going to continue to be small-minded. Because, like, there's all this stuff in the margins of this episode where they're showing people that are successfully navigating these changes. Like, the character of Shauna, who we met in season one, is this kind of, like, well-to-do Midwestern housewife who happened to be ridiculously attractive and loves sex. And she's like, I'm just going to make a lot of money, be an adult film star. She's talking to Lori and she's like, oh, I'm doing great. But you know, most of the money's now in the dance circuit, hon. And then kind of like, they talked about boob jobs and all that. But I thought that was interesting because, like, the way I understand it, that still tends to be the case that, like, stars, porn stars make their money by dancing and escorting. They make their real money.
Right.
And people like Lori, who are just being ground by, you know, scenes, are not going to be able to take advantage of this, where a person like Shanna, who's maybe taking easy on the drugs and still staying focused on where the money at, they're like able to successfully like negotiate these things. And it's also,
yeah, but Harvey's not gonna get fucked on camera or dance.
Yes,
he's the money guy at the top.
Yeah.
And his assessment of where he needs to take this company, I think, is correct historically.
Yeah,
like, you don't have a lot of big budget high concept porn films being made.
But that's what I was getting at, is like that he might be a little too small minded, because I do think there is money for that, like, niche porn. It's just that you have to fully embrace it. You have to go into that niche and really cater to it. Hmm. Where, like, to me, it's like Harvey's always tried to pull Eileen back from that. You know, it's not the way to make mass porn money, but can, like, you know, even today, like, it seems like a lot of the money that's made in pornography is in these kind of niche stuff. You know,
I feel
alt
that
sex.
Was kind of Eileen's pitch to Harvey at one point, wasn't that, like, we can be better than this and therefore make more money because we'll attract better clientele, essentially.
Right. But Harvey's seeing, like, where the stampede, where the herd's going, and like people like, you know, Shauna and maybe Eileen, if she can get rid of Harvey, see, like, where there is still ways for, like, a lone type of wolf. I don't know why we're herding and packing. It's the wolf pack. It got me started thinking about the animal apology. What do you call that? Biology? What's the anthropology but for animals? Animal behavior?
Animology. I have no idea.
There's a word for that. Like,
is there? I don't know what it is.
This guy, yeah, like, what the Steve Irwin? What's he do? Okay, Steve Irwin's a bad example.
Stingrayology.
Steve Irwin was the, you know, the evil Knievel of whatever I'm trying, the naturalist or something.
Bear Grylls. How about him?
Bear, no. Jacques Cousteau. He's like that of the oceanographer. I don't know.
Larry Brown. What does he do? He's a beast in his own right.
I just need to figure out a way to make a shark reference, and then we can get things into sharks, wolves.
I've got a way to take us.
Yes.
I see a lot of danger in this new porn industry, this new wave hookers stuff, because I was doing research on this. Apparently, Tracy Lords, very popular and notable porn star.
Saw this too.
Underage in new wave hookers.
Yeah, she was like 16 when she started doing porn and filmed.
And this became a big thing too. Like, everybody found out about it. There were lawsuits. Her movies... All but one of her movies was, like, banned from shelves and taken off. This could lead to potentially bad things.
Turns out that two skeezy dudes are looking to cut corners in the porn industry.
Don't check ID.
Maybe don't
check
ID. Also, like, the AIDS epidemic is going to, like
that too,
hurt the industry until they figure out a way to do, like, because they do crazy testing. Like, they're almost tested daily. But it is interesting to see these different pressures because, you know, as porn... Porn, when it was made in the golden age, you know, it wasn't as big as a Hollywood production, but you had camera guys, you had lighting people, you had makeup people, you had costumers, you had writers.
Right.
Porn nowadays, if it's not like, you know, amateurs doing stuff on mini vids, it's like a camera dude that's probably the director and as many performers as you need, and they rent some fucking godforsaken condo in Vegas or
Airbnb.
LA.
Yeah.
Or, and they fuck in it and that's it. there's ever more money being made, but it's made by fewer and fewer people, and there's not
it's the story of everything.
Story
of capitalism.
It's efficiency, man. It's you got the big money and you got the big money on one end, and you got the pornographers on the other.
do you think there's going to be any kind of intersection between Frankie and Harvey? Because Frankie's kind of doing what Harvey wants to get into.
Plus, I think he's working for Harvey.
I think so.
I think Harvey just sees Frankie as like the ideal porn director.
Is Frankie going to be Harvey's new Eileen by the end of this season?
I don't know. Because it's like, I also think that if he's working with Harvey, he's probably fucking Harvey too. Not like proper, no, but yeah, physically, like the way he's fucking Rudy, like skimming off the top. Right. It looks like there's a lot of money, a lot of business being done in cash.
He's misappropriating camcorders. I know that
much. He's misappropriating camcorders, which is a felony in the porn industry.
Do you think he's recording on porno tapes with his home videos? Like he's using the porno shoots that they're doing and using the tapes and recording
that
over.
That would be funny.
And his kids are going to like.
Oh, God.
It's going to be holiday 1985. Mm. They're going to be watching last year's video and all of a sudden hardcore pornography.
Yeah, because I don't know. Like, is the camcorder one-off joke of just like, oh, what's Frankie going to do with it? And then it's this wholesome thing? Or
it could be.
Is it going to, like, Rudy going to see some kind of tape that implies, I don't know, like, Frankie forgot and he's having a conversation with the drug dealer about, hey, we're fucking, yeah, we're screwing Rudy over and he's too fat and old to know about it, ha ha.
Why would he take that?
I don't know, because he's Frankie.
He's Frankie, yeah.
How did Frankie win a dry cleaning? Did you remember? He had a whole plot of
the dry cleaner wars of 1978. Yeah. I remember it.
Yeah, how does he end up in half of this shit? Who knows? How does he steal a whole truck full of left shoes? Who knows? He's fucking Frankie. He's capable.
I love it. It's such a good character.
Yeah. And then Lori, is it the same night that she falls off the wagon too? Is this all happening on New Year's Eve?
That sounds right to me.
Because holy hell, like there's a lot of parallels
she falls
between
off
her
at
and Bobby.
The show,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because she sees her pimp is dancing with the probably younger, hotter model. There's this all this talk about doing boob jobs and stuff, and now
she runs across some fans who offer her some blow, and she doesn't.
Yeah, who's going to turn it down? She goes from like, oh, I don't know, well, it's New Year's, to, oh, your man's holding? Fuck yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Eileen since we're kind of going there in the last topic anyway. I thought it was interesting, with our previous conversation about Harvey, that like Harvey's kind of date night with Eileen, not that they're dating, but you know, he takes her to, you know, see a bunch of early Kurosawa movies. Mm-hmm. And although now I think I'm actually finding the connection, because I'm like, why is he taking her to this all auteur stuff and feeding that side of her if he's wanting to strangle it in the professional thing? But maybe he was thinking, look, you know, Kurosawa could make brilliant stuff at shoestring budgets.
Okay.
Maybe he was like kind of like setting her up for like this pitch that just went disastrously wrong. Like, I wonder how much of that now that I'm thinking about it was premeditated, because the way like Harvey and his wife approached it is like they were like the look on Harvey's wife when he started the conversation, she's like, oh, here it comes. And, you know, when Candy's like, fuck this, I'm out, like, it seemed like the wife was supposed to be the good cop.
Yeah, and I thought in that scene, that first scene where they're exiting the theater, that there's some weird vibe going on there. And I read it as Harvey, like, sort of wanting to get with Eileen.
Yeah.
But now that you mention it, it might be that he's prepping to have a difficult conversation about the direction of the company.
Because he lays the line of like, hey, you can be genius and still do dirt, you know, cut rate work. And, you know, here's how the industry's changing. We got to edit a fuck flick and it's got to be PG because we're going to do it on this consumer floor. And, by the way, I will say this. Like, I don't know. Tantric sex, whatever. It's still got to be the worst porno.
Oh, I would think so.
Like, if you're just literally sitting inside somebody and not moving, that's like...
For 48 hours.
Yeah, that's like...
Sting.
Yeah, if you're Sting. I mean, that's an album cover for Sting.
It is.
But what it is not is a moving picture depicting pornographic imagery. It's I don't know. Yeah. I'm kind of pro Harvey on that side. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was... Maybe he was working her the whole time. It's interesting also that he's so afraid of camcorders, because it seems like that, you know, we live in an age where everyone has all the equipment they need to make high quality pornography in their pocket, a cell phone, you know, add a tripod, you're ready to go. And yet it doesn't seem like the market for pornography is like any lower than it ever has been. Maybe the margins are not great. Maybe the stars are being less well taken care of. But it's interesting that he sees all this technology as a threat, not an opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, he is the old establishment of porn now, which is weird to say because of where he started in season one, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But he is kind of that. And so I think the new stuff that he doesn't have a firm grasp on scares him.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. Like people, I mean, people do make, you know, I view porn as a commodity now. I think it's less like, you know, auteurs and professionals making porn. And it's more like, okay, well, any attractive person with a webcam is now a porn star. Mm-hmm. They can go cam. They can start it up in their bedroom.
Sure.
You know, in their shared four-bedroom apartment with four of the people.
I would love to see a stat that would show how much of the adult population in America has participated in sex work at this point. Because I bet it's exploded in the last decade.
Yeah, technology has certainly enabled it to.
I mean, just being on the internet, there's so many mm-hmm. people like doing amateur work with just like themselves or them as a couple, or like it's got to have increased. I don't know. Like I said, I wish I saw some stats. Maybe I can look that up for next week. I thought it was interesting also that, like, you know, one of the things we opened up in the talk about how the pimps have kind of been pushed out of the way of the story is it was interesting to see like the Dark Brothers just nakedly appropriating pimp culture mm-hmm. and how like Eileen was doing some kind of thoughtful, playful work with the tension between like races and sexuality. And now these guys are just the dumbest fucking bullshit, like the grossest stereotypes, making dumb jokes. And there's a whole bunch of old white guys in the audience laughing at it. And mm-hmm. I don't know. It didn't seem very sexy. Didn't also seem very funny. It's just like weird no man's land of like pre-Gonzo porn. And Eileen got no taste for it. There's also they talk about the focus on like the direct video is where it's all going to be from now.
Yeah.
No more. They called the
P&A. I mean, they're right about that.
Yeah.
For that era, certainly.
Yeah. Well, I don't. Are there adult theaters even on like Times Square nowadays?
And probably not in Times Square, but I'm sure there's got to be at least one left in the country. They're like drive-ins, right? Like, nobody goes to drive-ins on a regular basis, but every once in a while.
I just, the whole thing about the live theater experience is the dudes in the audience jerking off. Like, there's no need for that anymore. You can do it in the privacy of your own home. You have your own jerkatorium.
Oh, that's a negative mark in your mind?
Oh, so you're saying that part of...
I thought that was like because the experience of going to a theater traditionally is like... The audience participate, right? The audience is there with you.
Oh yeah, it's like Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah, uh-huh. So, I assume the jackatoriums, the mid 80s jackatoriums, were probably similar.
Then the other thing we haven't talked about is Eileen's personal life. Last season, she was getting thrown out of her own home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she's getting cut off from contact with her own kid.
Yeah,
by her father. Now we see that things kind of seem to have thawed between the two. Her mom's sick, which might explain a lot of it. Adam, mm-hmm. her son, is running wild. No one knows when they last saw him. That's interesting.
How old would he be at this point? Almost 20?
Yeah, I was thinking 18 to 20.
Okay.
Because I think he was like 7 or 8 when we first met him, and he seemed like he was 14, 15, like middle school years last year.
Or I was thinking 12, season. But maybe a little older, yeah.
Huh. But I don't know. I thought it's interesting the change in her mom is like, you know, because she's sitting there and like she's obviously sick at the end of her life and she's reflecting on the things that she didn't do as a young person and why just she didn't do them. In contrast to what Eileen's doing, it seems like that she's kind of taking a shine to what Eileen's doing and encouraging her instead mm-hmm. of being like, you're going to be running around all night. Hey, it's 19, you know, it's 1985. Go out and enjoy yourself.
Party. Like it's 1999. I think she says that in the episode.
Does she really?
No.
Oh, okay. And then she meets Corey Stoll at the end.
Right. Another guest star.
Yeah. It's been a while since I've seen him in something something like meaty that I've cared about. So.
Yeah. I saw him in The Strain was maybe the last time.
Yeah. He had a bit part in like one of the late seasons of Girls.
I think that's probably
the last time I'd seen him in anything. So he figures to make kind of a big splash.
Yeah, we don't know much about him. He purports to have money.
He's got money.
We think, yeah, unless he's just faking it.
He's cruising Times Square on New Year's Eve, flashing mm-hmm. a lot of cash and jewelry. He had a female companion that things didn't work out. And I wonder what, because like him and Eileen getting together, Like I got the idea that maybe she was a little trashy or not his speed. And he was looking for something more respectable.
Then what the fuck is he doing on 42nd Street?
Or maybe the thing is that like he ended up with a woman that's kind of uptight and prudish, and he's like one of these Wolf of Wall Street dudes. Wolf pack of Wall Street. What's the word on Anthropology? What did we figure that out yet?
He's Anthrozoology.
He's one of these dudes, and maybe he's looking for some fun money to sink into some weird auteur porn industry from a former sex worker that this All is right. like very exciting to
he,
his button
He hit
down
the
life.
Fucking jackpot then. Like just rolling, bellying up next to Eileen.
Yep.
That's a once in a lifetime opportunity if that's what he's here for.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's like, you know, Ed Wood finding his money, man. But yeah, I thought that was interesting that like, what does he do? Cause he talks about like, my name's Henry or Hank as my fellows on the mean streets of Greenwich call me. What?
I don't know what's going on in Greenwich in 1985.
I mean, they have a stock exchange in London. Like, is he like an international? Like I thought he was a Wall Street dude, but like Greenwich, what the fuck does that?
You know, if you're familiar with New York's history, I bet you're screaming at us right now.
Oh, like, oh, you dumb I was thinking fucks. Like, I was thinking actually England, London.
No, I think he's talking about Greenwich Village.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, then, yeah, fuck me. I don't know what that implies about him, but yeah. I thought he was just like an international finance guy. Anything else to talk about with Eileen?
No.
Let's bring round to Paul.
Okay. I was wondering if we were going to talk about Paul.
Oh, we got to talk about Paul.
Because he's still with, is it Todd? Is that his boyfriend's name?
I can't remember. It's the movie, the Broadway guy.
Yeah, the guy whose community theater he funded.
Yep.
Looks like that's going strong, but he is not. Paul's boyfriend is
Paul's boyfriend is you know, Philadelphia era Tom Hanks in this episode.
Does Paul have a gigantic head or is Todd's head just small?
I didn't notice the disparity in head size.
Oh, my God. It's
like the Death Star blowing up Alderaan.
Yes, if they kissed instead of blowing each other up, yeah.
Uh-huh. Wait, that'd be the opposite, because the Death Star is tiny compared to Alderaan. Whatever.
Yeah.
It's sharks and wolves.
It was all I could notice in that scene. I'm pretty sure I blacked out looking at the size of this man's head during this scene.
It's interesting, because like Paul's joint is the kind of swanky meeting ground for gay men that he wanted to be. They got the classiest New Year's Eve celebration out of all. It was jarring to see, like, you know, the very sedate and stately things going on at Paul's versus like the wild party over at Vinny's. But it's also like, I don't know. It's so funny to see society like going through like the AIDS scare. And then, like, all the awareness and, like, the backlash of the awareness kind of, like, crested with Team America's, you know, everybody's got AIDS, you know, takedown of Rin. And how it's kind of like it was seen as kind of a joke. But this episode brought it back into reality that, like, when these men are hugging each other and dancing this old Lang Syne song with the realization that some of them aren't going to – they're like that's, like, the thing is, like, some of these people – and you can throw Shay in this category too, don't look like they're going to see another year, and how like fucking poignant that is.
And probably ones who didn't get to see this moment.
It's like, imagine in our friend circle, if one of our wives or one of the wives, our friend's husbands were going to die the next year, like they had cancer or something, what a devastating thing that would be within our, but imagine like if like, I don't know, 15% of all of the couples in our community was going through the same thing. It's like, Jesus Christ, how do you go forward?
And if you had lost people from that community that year and you knew that more were going to be lost the next year,
you see the media not reporting accurate information. You see the politicians with their thumbs up their asses, sitting on information. And it's like
fingers being pointed, talking about, you know, how despicable the gay community is. Yeah. That's causing this. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like, this is, you know, a white middle-aged guy in the Midwest, like, first dealing with the actual emotions of the crisis. But, like, I was kind of blown away by the emotion they're able to, you know, wring out of this situation.
Without even trying.
Yeah, not in, like, a very, like, Philadelphia kind of way. No. But just, like, these are this is just a fucking sad state of events, a state of affairs with people that I kind of care about watching the show. So,
yeah.
And it's also kind of like, it seems like Paul's boyfriend is kind of a star. Like you said, that this community theater is going real well. There seems like a very well-received, well-attended play. I didn't do the research to find out if this is an actual play about these gays finding love in a concentration camp. But you know, this guy's finally making it, and he's making it as an artist, but he's got this disease, and you know, what are you going to do? There's other plot with Loretta, who is the former sex worker who has now turned women against pornography. This is kind of this David Simon's a specialty, where he shows well-meaning people doing things to attack a problem in the community and just doing it in the exact wrong way. Mm-hmm. And when they meet with success, double down, or when they meet with failure, double down. You know, this is kind of like what passes for ham-fisted with Simon his writing partners, like where they're just having a conversation about like, how long have you been doing this? 3-4 years, and it's getting less and less well attended and less successful. Mm-hmm. Should we do something different? And the girl kind of has like this visible look of confusion and just wanders back into the protest line.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about 80s era porn to know where this is going. Like, because one of the things that that Simon likes to do late stage project is kind of hint at ways forward. Mm-hmm. Like, these are all the stupid things that we do that don't affect the problem, that don't attack root cause solutions. You know, because like, I don't know, like my feelings on porn, it seems like it's been around for thousands and thousands of years. Like some of the earliest artifacts we have in human history are, you know, pornographic statues. There was all throughout like Greek and Roman culture. I think there is a lot of violence against women and exploitation of women in porn. I don't think it has to be that way, but damn, it does seem like it's the rule rather than the exception that, you know, women are exploited and used, all the performers really. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the answer. I'm curious to see what Simon kind of suggests.
I am too. It almost felt like a return to season two in some ways with that particular storyline. Like Loretta, was it Loretta? No, what was the woman's name who came back from California
and got killed? Dorothy, right?
Dorothy, that sounds right. Maybe she was trying to go like one-on-one with some of these people and making differences, you know, in individual lives. They had this like porn mobile, you know, this hooker mobile kind of thing
trying
going
to get
around.
Doctors and stuff. Yeah. Like, what happened to that direct action? Now we're just protesting.
Well, I think that evolved into a more like community-based sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Under Dorothy's care and what's his face from House of Cards, who just took off at the end of this season,
right?
Because it wasn't going well. Mm-hmm. Loretta, no, not Loretta. Who's the girl who works at the bar now?
That's Loretta.
That is Loretta. Okay. Yeah. Loretta seems to be trying to take a one-on-one approach again.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like these protests outside of places aren't mattering. Nothing's changing. So go one-on-one with the people who need the help.
That seems like what they were doing with Dorothy last year.
Yeah, it's a return to season two.
So it's like almost like, okay, so Loretta is seeing this with this activist. Like, okay, this protest stuff's not working. I'm going to go back to do. But like, obviously that didn't work either.
Right.
Or maybe it did work and Dorothy got herself killed.
I mean, it did seem like the, you know, the community compromise thing was starting to work. And then I can't remember exactly how that played out. That was all around the time of like Cece's death. And he seemed to be the smart one who realized, oh yeah, no, this is good for all of us.
It
makes sense for everybody. And then when he died, I'm assuming it just went right back to the way it was.
Yeah, and with like Dorothy being kind of the spearhead of that community, maybe it just kind of like it all worn out. Because that's the other thing, is like that shit's hard.
Yeah.
Like forming networks of doctors, healthcare professionals, politicians to fund it, running the van, that's hard. It's actually fucking easy to get a placard and write, you know, pornography enslaves women and march around and drone on outside of a porn shop for an hour and do absolutely nothing. That's like super easy. And you feel like you're doing something, but like actually tackling and trying to you know, especially when you're doing it on the civilian side and you're just having to beg for resources and stuff. I like I said, I'm very curious to see what there is some kind of suggestion of a solution to this here. And then I think we got Bobby. fucking Bobby to talk about. I feel like there's nothing super interesting about Bobby.
I feel like Bobby is still Bobby.
Yeah.
He's trying to hide his Bobbiness under a bad hairpiece.
What happened to his kid?
That's a good question.
He was getting probably taken advantage of by one of the girls that he'd fallen for.
I have read an article about from somebody who clearly has seen more than the first episode.
Uh-huh.
And they mention him, but I don't remember the context. So
yeah, I don't know. See, it feels like that.
Sounds like he's going to be around.
It feels significant that the next generation of these folks are all being talked about, but we don't really see anybody but Frankie's. It'll be interesting to see, like, when we catch up with Adam again, Bobby's boy comes back into focus, like Vincent's kids. Are we going to like understand that this is why the Deuce continues, you know, stumbling forward, like this irradiated cockroach that won't die, is because like it's just generations of people that this is the way you do, and you can't ever stamp it out because 15 years later is another crop ready to try it again. I don't know, but yeah, the image of him bare ass fucking this woman in the bathroom,
his hair flopping around,
haunting Jim
for many reasons.
I think that's all we've got, unless you got something else. I want to give out, or because we will be doing email. We probably won't get a lot of email on this show, but if you got some thoughts, you can send it in to tv@baldmove.com. I'll start compiling that starting next week. We will be doing this every Wednesday for the next, I believe, 8 episodes is what this TV show is scheduled for. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you're a David Simon fan, if you like The Wire, if you're enjoying The Deuce, please join us with it. And if you haven't given The Deuce a try, and you are a fan of David Simon, then yeah, it's pretty easy to catch up on. There's only 2 seasons, 17 episodes, and it's really an easy watch.
Oh yeah.
Hope you guys join us for the rest of it. Until next week, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
And we'll see you.